Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Just after 7 a.m., Tiger Woods was involved in a single car accident on Hawthorne Boulevard. That's near Rolling Hill Estates here in Southern California. According to reports, a neighbor alerted the authorities at 7:12 a.m. When authorities arrived, he was wearing a seatbelt and he was, quote, lucid and calm, but was unable to get out of the car. Initial reports mentioned that the jaws of life were used to get him out, but that was not the case. The fact that the jaws of life were mentioned in an initial statement, and that turned out to be not the case, is a very good reminder of the fact that in moments like this, with the way information spreads, as quickly as it spreads, the initial information oftentimes is not true. Here's what we understand happened at that point. He was taken to Harbor UCLA Medical Hospital. That's a little less than 10 miles away from the scene of the accident. At the time that I went off the air, there had been a statement from his agent, Mark Steinberg, that, quote, Tiger Woods was in a single car accident this morning in California where he suffered multiple leg injuries. He is currently in surgery. We thank you for your privacy and support, end quote. And now a little more than 24 hours after the accident, we do know a little bit more. According to L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva, Woods was driving at a, quote, relatively greater speed than normal, end quote, when his SUV made contact with the median. Then it went over the median, went across a couple of lanes, hit a curb, hit a number of trees, and rolled several times, with the vehicle ending up hundreds of feet from the road. Villanueva said that there were no skid marks and no evidence of braking. According to Villanueva, it's going to take days or weeks to complete a thorough investigation. Anish Mahajan is the chief medical officer and interim CEO at Harbor UCLA Medical Center. He released the following statement that was part of a larger statement, which was tweeted by Woods' Twitter account. Quote, Mr. Woods suffered significant orthopedic injuries to his right lower extremity that were treated during emergency surgery by trauma specialists at Harbor UCLA Medical Center, a level one trauma center. Comminuted, open fractures affecting both the upper and lower portions of the tibia and fibula bones were stabilized by inserting a rod into the tibia. Additional injuries to the bones of the foot and ankle were stabilized with a combination of screws and pins. Trauma to the muscle and soft tissue of the leg required surgical release of the covering of the muscles to relieve pressure due to swelling, end quote. So a lot of medical jargon there, but the good news is he is alive and he is awake following surgery and is responsive and is recovering in a hospital room. Man, you know how bad it is. You know how terrible a situation is, how bad an accident is when comminuted open fractures are considered good news. Because from the looks of that car, and the comments from authorities, yesterday could have been so much worse, especially if he had not been wearing a seatbelt. But that doesn't mean that it's not bad. It is brutal. I mean, what that means is you've got a tibia and a fibula, and there are multiple fractures. In fact, it sounds like not just fractures, it sounds like bones were shattered or crushed. And an open fracture means that the bone or bones were protruding through the skin. I mean, like the stuff of a horror movie. A rod was inserted into the leg for stabilization, and pins and screws were used to stabilize his foot and ankle. And in addition to all of that, on top of all of that, the insertion of a rod and pins and screws, they had to perform a surgical release on the leg to relieve pressure due to swelling. So that's the health status of Tiger Woods, and that's the latest update. And that's insane. That's crazy. We're talking about somebody who had a fifth back surgery not that long ago and was already rehabbing that. And now this. And on Monday, he was doing a video shoot with Dwayne Wade and David Spade at Rolling Hills Country Club. It was part of a series where he was going to give on-course instruction to celebrities. And then the reports yesterday was that he was due to shoot with Drew Brees and Justin Herbert. And then the next thing you know, he's undergoing emergency surgery in a level one trauma center. And yes, I'm aware of reports and speculation about yesterday morning, why he might have been traveling at a high rate of speed. But until we know more, I'm not going to get into that. In fact, that part of it really doesn't even interest me at all. I would just say, as one deputy pointed out, there are lots of people who speed in that same area, and there have been multiple accidents as a result. Also, authorities said that he was not impaired. He was not under the influence. And then there are all the folks rushing to make predictions about his future on the golf course. And that also, to me, is just neither here nor there. It's way ahead of schedule. He just had his leg or legs crushed in a car accident. He's got comminuted open fractures, rods, pins, and screws going into his legs. We don't even know the time frame for recovery from these surgeries or if more procedures are going to be necessary. What we know is he's somebody who's had countless surgeries on his legs and his back over the course of his career, and he's 45. What we know is he's a father, and that he's got two kids who are going through something right now that I can't even begin to imagine. And all of this comes a few months after he and his son Charlie played in a father-son event where it looked like they were both having the time of their lives. So much fun. And where Tiger had so much pride. The Tiger who played in that event looked a lot different from the ones we have seen in years previously. He looked like a different guy, a different person. And his friend Justin Thomas said yesterday his thoughts were with Tiger and his kids.
I'm sick to my stomach. You know, it hurts to see one of your, now my closest friends, get in an accident. And, man, I just hope he's all right. Just worry for his kids, I'm sure they're struggling.
So there probably will be more news coming out today, and I will continue to update it as it comes in. And if you want to talk about this, we certainly can. But the one thing I don't want to do, the one thing we're not going to do, is play amateur doctor or speculator or reporter or load up on a bunch of hearsay or conjecture or Twitter garbage. Not the time, not the place, not interested. Over the past 14 months, we've had a lot of reminders of how life can change in an instant, and this is yet another. So here's hoping that Tiger recovers as quickly and as soundly as possible without complication, and not so he can make a return to the tour, but for his family and for him personally. Brian Dutcher is my guest. Brian, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Thanks, Jim, and thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, Brian. So bring me up to date. You beat Fresno State on Saturday. That was your eighth straight win. How impressed have you been with the way the team is playing right now in late February when the pressure really starts to mount?
Yeah, we're feeling a little pressure, Jim. I mean, this is crunch time. We're not a Power 5 conference, obviously, so every win is critical for us to try to make sure we put ourselves in a position to make it to the big dance in March.
Now, we're talking about this, Brian. The season is so unusual, and the schedule is so unusual. Like, you're in second place in the conference, and you've got first-place Boise State coming to your place tomorrow night and Saturday, and you're tied with them in the loss column, and you're three games back in the win column. So how do you approach these games, these back-to-back games? What's it like to play that two-game series?
You know, I like the back-to-backs because the prep time is so much shorter in between games. You make an adjustment or two. I mean, when you have a travel, all of a sudden you're playing Wyoming and then you play Colorado State, and the turnaround's just as fast. It's like a whole another prep. So these back-to-back games I found really good for a preparation and a chance to beat that same team back-to-back.
Brian Dutcher joining us. And, of course, Brian, it's a lot to ask of the players because it's something so different, but everybody's had to make that adjustment. What about the group? What kind of conversations have you had with them about dealing with something that is very different? And it's different in the sense that now we have a new norm and their response to it.
This has been a great group. And we were shut down as an apartment in the fall for a couple of weeks. But since then, we've had business as usual. So we've been fortunate. We've avoided the COVID, we've been able to have a normal experience, as normal as it can be, but that requires great discipline from the kids, and they've had that. You know, the fact they can't go home, they have to stay in the county, they have to socially distance, they have to follow protocol, stay in their pods. And just, you can do all those things, Jim, and we've seen it. You can still come down with it. So we've been blessed to have the season we've had. Our administration, our university's done a great job finding a way to get us on the floor. And we're just embracing every time we can play a basketball game.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? I know I am. Before, I did not have a very good plan, but I do now. Listen, do not make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper instead. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender, and it's made from real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. Just look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. That way you can see exactly the quality you're getting. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because I'm telling you, no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? When you have college athletes, they're wired a little bit differently, and they've got to have a certain sense of purpose and focus and discipline. As an example, I've got a college-age son. We have a college-age son, and he's at Wisconsin, so he's in the Midwest, and it's cold, and he can't get outside, and he's stuck in his apartment, and there's online schooling, and it's just the experience is so different, and it's so challenging for young people to deal with. I think the average fan does not understand. They look at a basketball team like yours and just think, well, this is what these guys do. What's it like for somebody that age to deal with those kinds of challenges, and mentally, in terms of mental health, what kind of help do you give them?
You've got to be wired the right way to deal with this, and these kids I've got need to be wired the right way. You know, when you tell them they can't go home for a day at Christmas because they'd have to sit 10 days if they did, when you tell them they can't, we give them a day off, we've had a Saturday game, they have Sunday off, they're an hour from home, they can't go home, that discipline that's required is incredible for them to be able to make those kind of sacrifices to give themselves a chance to play college basketball. And it's not easy. I mean, obviously we have senior night coming up that's supposed to be Saturday night against Boise. We've got guys that have been in the program 4 years, Matt Mitchell, Jordan Shackle, 4-year guys in our program that can't have their parents walk out to midcourt with them and be recognized for all they've done for San Diego State basketball and San Diego State University. And all those moments we miss, and it's been a struggle for everybody, but we found a way to make the best of it.
And I'm glad you actually explained it exactly like that. That's exactly what I was getting at, because I think that on the outside, average people looking in don't understand the sort of challenges the players are facing. Now, yesterday, Brian, I spoke with Leonard Hamilton about his ability to reload at Florida State. You go 30-2 last season, you send an All-American like Malachi Flynn to the NBA, and yet you're right back here the next year battling for another conference title. How do you explain that?
It's just that Steve Fisher built something special here, and I've been able to take over and try to maintain the great things that he started at San Diego State. This was a wasteland for college basketball, but the university put up a beautiful arena that we were fortunate enough to get into. We've got a great recruiting base in California. We've been able to stretch outside our borders, and we've built it the right way. We've built it with kids that are about the right things, that want to win games beyond anything else, and that go about their business daily, that love basketball, that want to be in the gym, want to do the right things. And it's just been an incredible run. To think over the last 2 years, we're 47-6. That's pretty darn good.
It's actually amazing. Brian Dutcher joining us. And clearly, it's about recruiting for everybody. And in your case, it seems to me it's about recruiting to a certain identity. And in terms of that identity, what are we talking about, Brian? We're talking about defense. You've said it yourself. If a guy is going to go to San Diego State, he knows he's going to have to guard at an elite level. When you tell that to players, generally, how do they respond?
Well, they all think they want to play defense until they have to play defense.
Right, right.
So I tell them, if you guard hard, if you play maximum at the defensive end, I'll let you roll offensively. I'll let you play with great freedom. But you have to guard to get that kind of freedom at the offensive end. And so we have guys that have embraced that. They play extremely hard defensively. And then on offense, they play with tremendous freedom. They play together. They share the ball, and they play the right way.
All right, so finally, as you get ready for that series with Boise State, what is the number one key in your mind when it comes to facing them?
They've got great talent. They're very well coached. Leon Rice is a veteran in this league. He knows what he's doing. And I think a lot is going to be dependent on who rebounds the basketball. It's who gets the loose ball. When two teams are evenly matched, it's usually a play outside of what you're running. It's a loose ball rebound. It's a putback that makes all the difference in the world. And I think that will be the key. What team is able to get a loose ball, get a putback when the game's on the line.
San Diego State getting it done once again. They're 17-4 on the year. They're number 22 in the AP poll, and they've got a couple of big ones coming up. Starting tomorrow night at home against Boise State, their head coach is Brian Dutcher. Brian, great to have you back. Good luck this weekend, and always good to have you here in the jungle.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
My beef is with people who have to open their driver's side door to order food at the drive-thru. Hey, buddy, if you stopped ordering fast food so often, maybe you could afford to get your window fixed. Mike in Northeast Florida. It's kind of a weird one. Rome, I got beef with the dude in the public restroom that just quickly splashes water over his hands after using the urinal. For God's sakes, man. Really, Alvy? For God's sakes, man. It takes 5 seconds to push the soap dispenser button. Denny in the 402. Rome Slice. I got beef with adults that use the urinal with their pants at their ankles. My God. Head into the stall and shut the damn door, you freaking puke. Geoff and Lincoln. Hawk, why are we going back-to-back urinal beef? There's another one. What the hell's the matter with you, Hawk? Urinal beef, growler beef. Can you get it out of the bathroom? There's got to be beefs that are not bathroom related. Dear Pimp, my beef is with dudes who still refer to rabbits as bunnies. The animal is called a rabbit. Man up. Craig in Calgary. Hey, Rome, I got a beef. And it's with rapid fire texters. You know the people that send you a text message after message, one after another, that are one or two words, just seconds apart. They light up your phone like it's a fire alarm. Put your thoughts together in two or three sentences and send it in one text. Aaron in Iowa. All right, that's different. I mean, not unusual, but different. I like that. Jim, my beef is dog owner bag. They can't tie them up while I'm delivering a package and have the nerve to say, don't worry, they don't bite. Meanwhile, Fluffy is gnawing at my leg and barking louder than a freight train. Shut up and put your dog away. UPS driver Matt in Placentia. Good job, Matt. Sorry about that. Romy, my beef is with people who write, hope you are well. Clearly, they are not interested in really knowing how I'm doing, or else they would have asked that. Instead, they offer a half-hearted expression that doesn't invite any further conversation. You know what? I hope they're not doing well. Sean in Green Bay. I usually applaud for one during this segment. That's very well written. Very well said and very well written. Hey, Sean, you know why? You answered your own question. You know why they didn't ask? They don't give a damn. They don't care how you are. This is their way of getting out of asking and pretending they care. Hope you're well. No, you don't. You don't give a damn how I am. Well done, Sean. Jim, my beef is with my wife using all the towel racks in the bathrooms for decorative towels that I can't use. Where are the useful towels? Don in Buffalo. Well done. Also good. Or don't use those. Why? They're towels and they're in the bathroom. Hey, Romy, my beef is with brings a giant rolling travel bag of balls to Cosmic Bowling guy. Hey, Pete Weber, we are bowling under black lights while they play Katy Perry at a billion decibels. We're not trying out for the U.S. Open. Quit complaining about the lane etiquette of the 9-year-olds next to you, loser. Evan in Oregon. Also well done. This is a good segment today. And that's saying something because it always is. Dear Rome, my beef is with the old man at the gym who stands there, buck naked, using the hair dryer on his sack. Every gym has this dude. Greg in NorCal, go A's. Well, as long as you got your go A's in there, Greg. Come on, man. And when I say come on, man, I'm saying it to both you, Greg, and you, Hawk. Hawk, you like working here? It doesn't seem like it. You seem like a guy trying to get fired. You're giving me beefs about a guy taking a blow dryer to his sack. Yeah, yeah. Are you happy with yourself, Hawk? You seem to be. You shouldn't be. Jim, my beef is with the guy in the office. See, I guarantee you, Hawk, that the client's not happy with that. I don't think that the client had that in mind when they conceptualized the What's Your Beef segment. I don't think anybody with Old Trapper thought to themselves, you know what? I'll tell you guys got beef. The guy at the gym who looks over and sees the guy with the hair dryer drying his hair. Think about that, Hawk. Jim, my beef is with the guy in the office who sends an email at 5:01 p.m. after everybody left for the day just to show that he's still working. Sorry that the rest of us are at Applebee's indulging in bottomless appetizers and half-price cocktails. John in the HV. You mean Friday at 5:01 p.m. Rome. My beef is with high school kids who can't pass online classes. How the hell can you fail a class when all you had to do was sit and be conscious on a lapper and literally just do what the teacher says? These pubescent, zit-faced, phone-addicted monsters couldn't pay attention if it was free. Kenny in Albany. Well, that one hits close to home, doesn't it? How many of you listening right now can relate to what he just said about these pubescent, zit-infested monsters who can't pay attention and pass a class? Hey, by the way, how the hell are they judging how our kids are getting into college at a time like right now? If the classes are pass-fail, how are we getting our kids into college? I know I speak for a lot of you because I've got one of those kids right now. I've got one kid in college who's trying to make do during a pandemic and it's minus 20 and he can't leave his apartment. And I've got another kid who's living the life at home, pass, fail, who, and if you ask a kid to do pass or fail work, they're going to do just enough to pass, right? I'm going to give you a, let me give you an imitation. You tell me who I'm imitating. Every teenager, man, like from their bed, like, hey, yo, what's up, dad? They got their lean going. If you're not watching on TV, that didn't work. Imagine me in my 16-year-old kid phone out lean. You know, not that lean like when you're rolling in your rig down the street and you got your lean going. I'm talking about the 16-year-old kid with his phone prone on the couch in the lean. Jimmo, I got, that's my beef, by the way. Jimmo, I got beef with barbers who ask, want a beer while getting a haircut? Sure, I'd love one. But what the hell have you been doing before I got here? I'm looking for a clean cut, not a butcher job. Shafe in Buffalo. Shafe, true story. When I was a kid growing up in the 818, I had a barber. Man, I love this guy. This dude was good. This guy, I digress. I got to share this really quickly. This dude was good. This guy was an old school barber. I went to a barber, old school barber. And I think I was just old enough to get my driver's license. My man would crack open a Budweiser at 7 a.m. in a bad way, like hungover. And I thought that was a little unusual, but it didn't seem to affect his work. Then one day, this same guy breaks out this conversation on me. This is a guy who's drinking Bud at 7 a.m. Yo, man, you smoke Bud? Yeah, I said, nah, dude. Nah, not really. He's like, yeah, man, it's amazing. It's amazing. You know what it's really good for? And I'm like, this is getting kind of awkward. Not in a cool way either, you know? Because I'm kind of a nerdy kid. And he's drinking Budweiser at 7 a.m. And now he's elevated the conversation to, hey, man, you get high? I said, no. He's like, I'm telling you, dude, it's great for sex, too. I'm like, dang, man. All right. Shafe. So not only did the barber ask, this guy didn't ask me if I wanted a beer. He just gave himself a beer. He cracked one open at 7 a.m. and not once. Hey, Jim, I got beef with yawns out loud guy. This guy thinks that letting out an audible wail somehow proves that he's more tired than everybody else. Lock it up and suffer in silence like the rest of us. War bums using soup can lids to shave their face. Joe in Portland. My beef is when a server asks, are you still working on that? Well, I'm finishing my dinner. No restaurant meal should ever be considered, quote, work. John in Omaha.
Omaha!
Let's go to the phones.
Hey, John.
Mark in Boston. Mark, what's your beef?
Hello, Jim. I have a beef with Peloton guy, and I'm sorry you might get caught up in the jet wash here a little bit, but hey, when I'm on my Facebook and I want to scroll through hundreds of political mindless ads to melt my brain, and then suddenly I see Danny the Bag from high school who just did a 45-minute arbs and intervals Peloton with some sweaty millennial named Braylon or Andy, I press my home button and I head over to Instagram. And there's Danny the Bag again, sweating thumbs up. I just did a 45-minute arms and intervals with Andy. Come join me on Peloton. So then I go over to TikTok to watch a bunch of random SoCal skanks dance to WAP. And there's Danny again doing his Peloton. I don't care if you exercise, bro. Stop telling me about it. Thank you.
That was awesome. Mark in Boston, rack him. That was truly awesome. Bro, I can't wait to go home and knock out a 60-minute ride and put that on my story. Jimmy the Bag in SoCal. 1-800-636-8686. That was tremendous. Let's go to Bristol. Daryl in Bristol. What's your beef, Daryl?
Jim, my beef is in all 50 states, you can turn right on red unless posted otherwise. Why do only less than half of the driving public know this? Read a manual, you idiots.
Interesting. All right. Daryl, thank you very much. I thought everybody knew that you can make a right-handed turn on a red light unless a sign indicates that there is no right-handed turn on the red light. He said, we've got manuals, idiots. What is your beef? Let's go to the STL. June. June, what is your beef?
Hey, what's up, Jim? Just got back from lunch with a monkey. My beef is nose whistling on golf broadcasts. Like, DJ's got to get up and down on 17 at Pinehurst, and I got to hear about Jim Nance's respiratory pattern, or Nick Fallow's got bats in the cave. Put the lure on this. There's got to be some technology where you can, like, take out the nose whistling on golf broadcasts. Sorry, it's my beef. I'm out.
Well, I didn't say what you can and cannot beef about. Nose whistling? Bats in the cage? Is that what he said? Or bats in the cave? Yeah, I know what that means, Hawk. Bats in the cave. Man, I had some animals stuck in my chimney last night in our master bedroom. We've got a little sitting area off the master with a chimney that I do not use. There was some bat in that cave, man. That was pissing me off. That kept me up last night. 1-800-636-8686. Hawk, you idiot. I can tell by your reaction. I can tell by your body language that you think this is funny, but it's not going to be funny. Look at you, man. Dude, I've never seen a less confident solicit. Hawk's like, let's go. Just do line four. Whatever I have to deal with is going to be worth it because I think it's funny. Jim won't think so. And I'll hear about it on the air, but it'll be funny. And there'll be four other idiots on Twitter that think it's funny too. Hey, go to line four, host. All right, Hawk, I'll do that. You had four fingers up. I won't shake you off. Hawk's like the catcher who puts four fingers down. Like, yeah, I'd be shaking him off every single time. All right, I'll play along. Let's go to the 360. Wells, you're the guy, Wells. What's up? What's your beef?
Man, I was hoping the whole time you weren't talking about me. But apparently you were. My beef is still with microwave popcorn and how frustrating it is. Why do they make it so hard to get out? First, you got to go through a cardboard box. Inside the cardboard box is the plastic bag. Inside the plastic bag is the paper bag. Inside the paper bag is finally the popcorn. Once you get it out and pop it, you can't get it out of your teeth. So you're going to be watching a movie with your significant other. Half the movie, you're going to be moving your tongue around trying to loosen that kernel. When you finally give up, grab a toothpick and head to the bathroom mirror, she's going to fall asleep. So once she falls asleep, you have zero.
Wells. You don't like that cup. You should know by now how this segment works. Beef, man. Beef, 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 beef. You don't get to set your beef up over some dissertation or five stanza dissertation or five paragraphs. Man, just what's your beef, dude? What is your beef? Keep moving. Let's go to Amarillo. Damon, good to have you. Damon, what's your beef?
Hey, Jim, first time, long time. But my beef is with apartment guy, second floor, yelling at me every morning for walking my dog on a pedestrian sidewalk just near his apartment. Hello, newsflash, you got an apartment that allows dogs out.
Yeah, what's that guy's problem? If it's an apartment that allows animals, what do you expect? Let's keep moving. What would a beef segment be like without Kathleen? She always has beef. Kathleen, what is your beef?
Brady is a drunken avocado, and I hate him as much as I love Johannes Ekström. Brady wouldn't stand a chance against Johannes in a beauty contest because Johannes is drop-dead gorgeous, half Swedish, half German, and 9 years younger than that 43-year-old piece of rat vomit.
Racker. Hey, Kathleen, thirsty much? Oh, what's your beef? My beef is that rat vomit Tom Brady. He's not hot. He's rat vomit. 1-800-636-8686. Why? How about Baco? I love Bakersfield, man. Can I go to Baco? Let's go to Baco. James in Bakersfield. Central Cali, yo. Yo, James, what's up?
What's up, Romy? Hey, my beef is with Panda Express, always ordering, you know, the two-item plate and getting the teriyaki, but never any teriyaki sauce on the teriyaki.
You're unique, and so are your taxes. TurboTax Live is experienced tax experts who listen to you, learn about your unique tax situations, and answer your questions. And on top of all that, they can do your taxes from start to finish. Maybe you began investing and you want some reassurance from an expert that you're doing things the right way. Or maybe now you're self-employed and you need some expert advice on what qualifies as a home office deduction. Or maybe you'd rather have an expert file your taxes for you so you can focus on what matters most. No matter what your situation is, TurboTax Live tax experts can answer all of your questions, give tax advice, review your return before you file, or even do it all for you. TurboTax Live gives you confidence that your uniquely you taxes are done right. Intuit TurboTax Live. File with the help of an expert or let an expert file for you. He is Michael Malone. Michael, it's great to have you back. Michael, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim, and as always, man, great to be on with you.
As always, I appreciate you making time for it, and I appreciate the relationship. So you beat Portland last night 111-106 in a game where Joker had 41, Jamal Murray had 19 of his 24 in the fourth quarter. I want to ask you about both those guys in a moment, but, Michael, as a team, you had a single turnover for the entire game. How pleased were you with that stat? What's it say about your team?
Yeah, that was amazing stat. Obviously, I believe, Jim, the NBA started keeping turnovers as a stat around 1984, and one turnover set an NBA record. I think there are five or six teams that had two turnovers in a game. So for us to have 25 assists, only one turnover, that was a big part of us getting that division win last night, an important win for us after a tough four-game road trip. So guys understood the importance of valuing the ball. That has been an issue for us as of late, and tonight, last night rather, we did it at a historical level, so that was great to see.
No doubt. Michael Malone joining us. So Joker had 23 in the first half, another 12 more in the third. When he's rolling like that, I understand you have a job to do. I understand you're still coaching, but as somebody who loves the game, do you ever catch yourself just kind of sitting back and watching him work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think growing up in this game, being around the NBA for a long time through my father, now my 20 years in the league, you have to enjoy the moments and you have to enjoy greatness. And obviously I've been really privileged to have the opportunity to coach some great players, you know, LeBron James, Chris Paul, Steph Curry, so on and so forth. And Nikola is just amazing. What he's done this season overall, putting this team on his back, after the great run we had in the bubble last season, has been remarkable. And to your point, I love the fact that he's just being a lot more aggressive this year, looking to score. We all know he's a great passer. We all know he's a hell of a rebounder. But for us to go anywhere, Nikola's got to be that guy that carries us. And he leads the NBA with 4 40-point games this season. And last night was just another treat to watch him out there doing his thing and doing it very efficiently.
We're talking to Michael Malone. You know, Michael, one more thing about him, and I want to talk about work ethic for a minute, because I'm always fascinated by the amount of time that guys work or put in and their preparation and their process. It seems to me, I don't think people truly appreciate the amount of work he puts in or his work ethic. For those who do not get to see it in person, how would you describe the way he approaches his work, and then what's it mean to the rest of the team when your best player is modeling that level of work ethic?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, Jim, because I think it's not only a great point, but a really important point. Because Nikola, you know, most of our fans see the games and that's it. They never get to peek behind the curtain to see, well, what goes on before practice, after practice? What does an off day look like for an NBA player? And then let's take it a step further in Nikola's case. Let's say after 83 days in a bubble and you're going into the shortest off season, what do those 2 months look like when you go back to your native Serbia? And I think a lot of guys in Nikola's situation would have probably come up for air, relaxed, and taken it easy for a little bit. And what I love about Nikola, and he has to get so much respect and credit for this, is that over those 2 months back home in Serbia, he never came up for air. He continued to work and stay ready and stay focused. And I think it comes down to just a commitment to himself, his commitment to his teammates and the organization. We've made a huge commitment with Nikola, and he's returned it, tenfold. And it says a lot because, you know, we have 7 new players this year, a lot of young kids. And to your earlier point, when your best player, when your all-star starter MVP candidate is your hardest worker, that sets the tone for everybody else. And when I say this, I'm not making this up, Jim. When we do our stretching before practice, Nikola does that 100%. He doesn't skip any steps. He doesn't have any wasted reps. He does everything hard and with purpose. And you hope that example that he's setting is going to really, for RJ Hampton, a rookie, for Zeke Nnaji, another rookie, that's going to say, you know what, our best player is working like that. I have to do the same. And that's a credit to Nikola, and we're lucky to have him here in Denver.
Michael Malone, my guest. I love that line, that he does everything hard and with purpose. You know, Michael, you mentioned how important it is for him to get that team on his back. But again, he doesn't have to do it all by himself. He's got a supporting cast, and he's got another star in Jamal Murray. In fact, how much of a luxury is that? And how nice is it for you to know that you've got Jamal Murray, that he's always there and he'll step up, and you yourself do not have to push Joker too hard?
Yeah, it's been great. I think in the last 8 games, Jim, we're 5-3. And the best part about this is, you know, I think all of our fans, a lot of people around this nation, after watching Jamal Murray in the bubble, you know, put on a performance. And that first round against Utah was one of the best series that I've ever seen. And Jamal was a huge part of that. And earlier in the season, you know, Jamal was somewhat up and down. You know, and that's just the reality of it. It wasn't because he wasn't trying or didn't care, but he was just having some tough games. But the best thing about our last 8 games is, you know, Jamal has really found his stride, his confidence. He's averaging 28 points a game in the last 8, leading us in scoring. But most importantly, Jim, he's doing it while shooting 55 from the field and 48 from 3. So those are really efficient numbers. So now we're getting back to having that two-pronged attack with two, you know, all NBA-type players in Nikola and Jamal, and then the other guys can kind of fit in. And we've done this all while having so many injuries to guys like Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, Jermichael Green, P.J. Dozier, 4 rotational players with 2 starters. So an important time for Jamal to pick it up, and he has done so at a very high level.
Nuggets head coach Michael Malone is joining us. And then one more thought about Jamal in terms of him picking it up. He had that 50-point game recently where he did not shoot a single free throw. Yeah. And the story goes that you had spoken to him recently about being more aggressive and not passing up open shots. Can you share with us what was that conversation like? And then what did you make of that performance on Friday night?
Yeah, you know, Jamal and I, and I feel really fortunate, you know, obviously being in this game for as long as I have been, you know, I've learned from my father that you can know all the plays and everything else, Jim, but ultimately it always comes down to relationships. And I love the relationship that I had with both Nicola and Jamal, as well as everyone else on our team. You know, that's what I think makes our culture really special. We're a very connected team and group. But we can have, Jamal and I can have honest conversations. And when he's not playing to the level that we need him to, you know, he's not one that's going to, you know, sit there and not own it. You know, he's willing to take ownership and admit, I have to play better. And part of that was, you know, I think a lot of times Jamal was turning down open shots, shots where everybody in our team was saying, shoot the ball. He would turn that down to take a much tougher shot or, even worse, sometimes turn the ball over. And so the best part about his play as of late, the 50-point game, but even other games, 19 points in our fourth quarter last night, as you mentioned earlier, he's just looking to be a lot more aggressive, knowing that we need him and Nicola to lead us. And, you know, being committed, being shot ready, and even if you shoot the ball and miss, it's still a good shot because now everybody on the floor knows that, okay, Jamal's ready to shoot, and now we know where we can react, hit the offensive glass, get back in transition, whatever it may be. But Jamal and I, Nicola and I, all of our guys, a lot of open and honest conversations, and I think that's critical to having a really close team.
And to have the culture that you're looking to develop, I would imagine. Michael Malone is joining us for a few more moments. Michael, what about Michael Porter Jr.? Now, he led the team in minutes last night. He had 12 points, but he led the team in rebounds and in shots contested. And then afterwards, he made the point of saying, man, I'm sick of people saying that I don't play defense. It seems to me when you look at a player like that, and he's been able to score the ball at every level that he's ever played on, then somebody might like that might say, this is who I am. This is what I do. I'm a scorer. What's it say to you that he's worked as hard as he has on the defensive end and has that attitude about defense now?
Oh, I love it. And I think it speaks to Michael growing up and maturing in front of our eyes. And I'll take you back to the bubble and a conversation I had with Michael. I said, you know, you have a choice here because you're right. Every year of Michael's life, he's been one of the best players in the country, not in his state, not in his town, in the country. He's been a prolific scorer. That's kind of what he made his name off of, his ability to score and get buckets at a high level. Well, now he joins a team that's a pretty good basketball team, and he realizes that, you know what, the ball may not be in my hands as much as it has been elsewhere. And my challenge to him was, I said, you got to ask yourself this question, Michael. Do you want to be a great scorer or do you want to be a great player? Because if you want to be a great player, you have to commit to doing other things than just scoring. And that requires defense. That requires defensive commitment. He's a hell of a rebounder. I mean, that's one thing he's also done at a high level ever since he's joined our team. You put him out there, he finds a way to get to the glass. So for him to only score 12 points last night and do so pretty efficiently, but lead us in rebounding, lead us in contested shots, and say after the game, Coach, man, I just wanted to help us get a win. That, to me, shows signs of growing up, maturing, and buying into our selfless culture. It's never about any individual. It's about us collectively trying to win as many games as we can. And, you know, Michael has shown a lot of growth in that area.
Michael Malone joining us. RC mentioned rebounding and the fact that he's a great rebounder. So what makes a great rebounder? Is it positioning? Is it want to? Is it technique? Is it playing the angles? Is it all the above? Like, what separates a great rebounder from those who don't or aren't?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a combination of a lot of things that you just mentioned, Jim. I think Michael is blessed with great size and length. That definitely helps. But I also think you have to have a desire, a want to get on the glass. And then you also mentioned the understanding of angles, where the shot is taken, where is it most likely going to, if it is missed, where is it most likely going to rebound and kick out to. So, you know, I think Michael uses his body. He's worked hard on his body, mind you. He came in, obviously, he dropped draft night because of concerns about his back. But he's put a lot of time, energy into getting stronger, getting healthy. That's helped him along with the length that he has. But he wants to go get the ball. Last night, I mean, you know, Portland is a very good offensive rebounding team, and Michael had 9 defensive rebounds. He was tremendous on the glass, and it wasn't just like they were empty rebounds. He was going up and grabbing them in traffic, and those are the ones that you want to see because that is shown that desire and want to mix it up, to hit bodies, and go get that ball. And Michael obviously did that at a high level for us.
He is the head coach of the Denver Nuggets. Big win last night over Portland. He led Denver to the conference finals for the first time in more than a decade. And Denver is hosting Washington tomorrow night. He is a good friend of this program, Michael Malone. Michael, I'll reiterate, I appreciate the relationship. I always love the conversation. And so good to have you back, Michael. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Appreciate it, man. Best to you and your family.
Dan Wetzel is my guest. Dan, good to have you back. How you doing, Dan?
I'm great, Jim. How are you today?
Great to have you. Thanks for doing this. You have a great piece up right now on Yahoo about Tiger Woods, which I want to get to in a moment. But Dan, first, I mean, you've seen everything, you've covered everything. I'm curious, what was your mind when you heard that he had been in a car accident?
You know, first, just what happened. I mean, how serious? You know, I think, and I have another piece coming out, like, I think this hit people, it certainly did me, maybe in a way I wasn't expecting. It's not that you ever want to see anybody hurt in a car accident, but there was sort of just a sense of dread at just how bad was this. You know, was it life-threatening? You know, were we going to lose Tiger Woods? And, you know, talking to a lot of people, I think that was that initial thought. Just, you know, because there just were so few details. It had been so many hours. You know, here the accident happens at 7. It's, you know, 4 or 5 hours later before it even breaks. And, you know, you just wonder what's going on. So I think I had the similar just human reaction of everyone. And then it's just sort of, okay, what does this mean? What happened? Why did this happen? You know, I think we're all looking at the roadmap and trying to figure out how this all occurred.
Dan Wetzel is joining us, a Yahoo Sports columnist. Dan, you opened up the piece with images from December when Tiger and his son Charlie were playing in the PGA father-son event together. What did you make of the Tiger Woods that you saw in that event?
You know, I thought that was one of the most remarkable things. I've covered Tiger for, you know, nearly 20 years, been at many of his major championships, many of the ones he lost. There's a stretch there. I would just go to every major. You know, I don't know the guy. I don't think any reporter does, but I've seen him, you know, so many hours, and then all the TV. And he's famous for his smile, right? He's got that light the world up grin that can be when he's kind of telling a joke, and he's not a particularly like outwardly funny guy, but when he tells a joke, and then the grin when he's winning and he's satisfied, the look in his face playing with Charlie was all different. It was the same smile, same teeth, same, you know, grin, but just had that different look to it. And I think any of us have been a father, you know, the pride and just the immense just joy that you would have at that event watching your 11-year-old who swings like you, dresses like you, has all the same mannerisms, just doing something and being so excited and proud as an 11-year-old was just amazing. And, you know, we've seen Tiger at his heights and we've seen Tiger at his depths, and they are spectacular heights and spectacular depths. And that just to me was like, wow, this guy's finally maybe in this great spot where who cares what he's doing on a golf course other than getting to play with his kids. And I just thought it was an amazing scene. And I think Tiger, his son, and all of us are lucky that it happened and we got to see it and experience it, because it was really maybe the most human Tiger Woods that I've seen in all the times he's been in public.
Agreed. Dan Wetzel is joining us and sharing his thoughts. Now, Dan, it's not just that he's a golf dad. Certainly he is that, as you lay out. He's also become something of a big brother and a mentor to a number of guys on tour. Like, that's interesting in and of itself. What do you make of that arc in terms of how he relates to other guys on tour?
You know, I think especially since he won that last Masters, the last 2 years, if you look at his golf results, he has not been playing well. And you know, he hasn't, his best finish is tied 38. I think he knows that he's not, he knows even before this that he's not a contender quite the same way he did. For a long time, he was about intimidation and always having an edge on somebody, and 24/7. I mean, he could be fun and friendly to guys, but he was never going to turn it off when he was around Mickelson or Sergio or I don't know, anybody he was competing with. It was always trying to have an edge so that he could beat them at some point. A lot of the way Michael Jordan was playing cards or any interaction. And I think in the last few years, as he settled in, maybe before he won that Masters, but certainly since, that, you know what, I can't go with these guys every week. I'm not going to scare them. I can't rattle Dustin Johnson. I can't, these younger, you know, I'm the big brother, and it's okay. Maybe I can compete with them and beat them once in a while. I was sure as hell not going to give up, but it was just a different interaction, it seemed like, when you hear from players now than the players you would hear from 15 years ago who barely knew them. And so I think it's just a totally different relationship. I think you just, it's just a natural thing as you move into your mid-40s and realize you had your day and maybe you'll have a day again, but I don't need to – I can sit back and relax and enjoy these guys a little more. I don't need to try to intimidate them at all points because, quite honestly, I'm not sure he does intimidate anybody anymore.
Right. Dan Wetzel joining us. I mean, that said, and knowing what we think we know about him right now and knowing what we know about this accident and the injuries he sustained and then the rehab – this in front of him, what do you make then of the importance that competitive golf is going to play in his life going forward, if you had to guess?
You know, my guess is that his number one goal is to obviously get up and be able to play golf with his kids, walk normally, all the basic things. And we don't know the extent of what this rehab's going to be or what limitations he may have. But, you know, he's had, I think, 10 or 11 surgeries the last decade or so. And when it doesn't always make the sound bites, but if you were at a press conference or you were talking to him and he mentioned the surgeries, his goal was always like, I got to make sure I can play with my kids, particularly the last X number of years. It was always about just having a normal life. And I think that's his number one goal. This isn't the Tiger of when he was 27 years old and the only thing that mattered was winning. Now, he's still an alpha dog. I'm not, you know, he is still mega competitive. He might immediately reject that, but if you listen to him carefully, it was always about Charlie and Sam. It was always about living a regular life. And so I think competitive golf is way down the list on this. I think people who, And I respect everyone's opinion. I don't know the guy. I'm not saying I know the guy intimately or I know everything that he's thinking right now. But in my opinion, competitive golf is not a big deal to him right now. This isn't the guy who's like, I have to get back and I have to beat Jack Nicklaus. I think he came to grips with all of that a long time ago. And this is all about, can I get back and play that PNC father-child event with Charlie again? And can I walk the course if he's playing junior golf? Can I, you know, be there for Sam or something like that? I don't think competitive golf is going to be a huge priority for him. If it is, it's just to get back and play one time or something.
Dan Wetzel, my guest. I appreciate your thoughts on that, Dan, very much. Before I let you go, one of my favorite things about you coming on this program is we can hit on multiple topics. So before you go, and there's not a great transition to Deion Sanders in his coaching debut, but I got to do this anyway. Jackson State beat Edward Waters 53-0. Troy Aikman was there after arriving in a white limo. What did you make of the fanfare surrounding Deion's debut?
Everything we expect out of Coach Prime. Everything.
Coach Prime.
Here's the now, obviously, there are a couple other things happened. One, you know, the poor Jackson, Mississippi, he's got no running water right now, like the stadium was frozen over. Coach Prime takes the field with two cops surrounding him, like he's like the old Bobby Bowden or like he's Bill Belichick, right? Like someone's like there's a throng of fans ready to jump him. But then at the same time, he gets his wallet stolen from the locker room and makes a big deal about that. Every single thing he did was just over the top, including coaching really well. Like they had a good game. I mean, now it was not great competition, but still. But he's Coach Prime. But in one of the press releases that Jackson State puts out, the school refers to him as Coach Prime.
Incredible.
It's statement from Coach Prime. That's how they put it out there. They don't say Deion Sanders. So if he wants to be called Coach Prime, I'm calling him Coach Prime. Okay, that's his choice. But no, he's great. He's adding some spice to it. He's going to come with the flair. There's going to be big drama. He's going to talk a big game. And probably going to coach pretty well. He's a very, very smart guy. You know him a little bit. He's a very smart guy. And so I think it's great. I think it's great for Jackson State. I think it's great for FCS football. It's great for HBCU football. And it's great for all of us who love characters in the game. So I'm all for Coach Prime. He's done pretty well so far.
Coach Prime living up to all the hype. All right, Dan, you've made the point, and I got to move on to something else really quickly because this is key. You've been all over this beat. Lots of different beats, and I've always respected your versatility, but you've been dominating one beat in particular, the Chicken Wars beat. You've been all over this. Taco Bell has jumped into the fray. What do you make of their entry?
Well, it gets to an existential question. Is a taco a sandwich? You can't enter the chicken sandwich wars if the taco's not a sandwich. And I think that's really the bold existential question that Taco Bell is trying to throw out there. Is taco a sandwich or not? And I don't know. That's the real question. But I don't think Taco Bell, for all its glory, we'll be able to really challenge Chick-fil-A or Popeyes at the top of this heap. But we will see. You cannot rule out Taco Bell. They've redefined a lot of things in this country for good or worse.
But
we're waiting for anybody to jump in now. I mean, everyone's in the top. It's one thing for McDonald's, you know, or some of these KFC, but like Taco Bell, like, are we going to get IHOP? Are we going to, you know, like, who's coming next? Who's jumping in on this?
I think it's all fair, but I'm kind of stuck on that first existential question. Like, how do we define a sandwich? How do we define a sandwich? And then once we define that, then the natural follow is a taco then a sandwich? Is a hot dog a sandwich? I mean, where do we draw the line? What's a sandwich?
Well, and then here's another one. Is a hot dog a taco?
Right. Is it?
Is a hot dog just a subset of a taco? If a taco becomes a sandwich, there's a lot going on here, Jim, that not everyone in the country's aware of. Not everyone's paying attention, but there are a lot of debates about philosophy going on and on sandwiches. I don't know. I don't have all the answers, but I'm intrigued.
It's heavy. So really quickly, last thing then, Dan, what do you come out? If we can't answer that question right here, there's not enough time right here, and this is not the right time and place for this conversation. What about Taco Bell overall? Where does it rank on your list of restaurants overall?
I think inebriation level plays a major role. And I think there's a sliding scale with Taco Bell and how much money you got in your pocket. But, you know, there's times that fourth meal really comes through. I think they really keyed on something like that. So, I got nothing bad to say about Taco Bell. I may not have all the greatest things to say, but I got no negatives to Taco Bell.
That makes sense to me. Listen, there's nobody else I could have that conversation, that kind of depth, that kind of range, and cover that many things with. And Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports columnist, New York Times bestselling author, co-host of an excellent, excellent podcast, the Yahoo Sports College Podcast, and a good friend of the program. Dan, appreciate you very, very much. Thanks so much. Great to have you back.
Thanks, Jim. Talk to you later, man.
You're the best, dude.
Good night now!